Welcome to Slay, the podcast where we dive into all aspects of female health, fitness, and life. I'm your host, Louise Hazel, and in today's episode, we're going to discuss how to improve our relationship with food and our bodies. Let's face it, we women put a lot of pressure on ourselves on a daily basis, and it's natural to care about your appearance. But when do we cross the line between self-care and caring too much? When does our preoccupation with food and our bodies become overbearing? Maybe you've noticed yourself forming unhealthy habits. Maybe you've been comparing yourself to others, or maybe you think you might be suffering from body image issues. If so, then this episode is for you. Joining me this week to unpack this topic is a formidable woman. She's dishing out amazing advice daily on Instagram. It's co-founder of HitBurn and your fitness bestie. It's Kelsey Heenan, aka the Daily Kelsey. Hello, Kelsey.
Hello. Oh, it's so nice to see you.
I know. I feel like we've been connecting on Instagram, but now this is our first date in person. I'm so excited.
So excited. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I love that. So you are co-founder of HitBurn.
Yes.
Which you run with your husband, Den.
Yes.
And you guys have been married for how long?
13 years.
Which I cannot believe. You don't look old enough. First and foremost.
We were very young. We got married right out of college.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so we met in college. We both played basketball there. Our teams would travel together. And so we just became fast friends.
This never happens in the UK. Kids rarely get married in the UK out of college. It's such an American thing. And also it's something that we just assume everybody in the US gets married at age 21.
Totally. Well, and it's an interesting thing too, because I feel like it's a very Midwestern thing too, because a lot of my friends from high school all got married really young.
Yeah.
And some of my friends out here in LA wouldn't even consider it until 30s.
Spinsters. Yeah. Still spinsters. Well, listen, we're going to get into it. This is, I think, a really important topic. And I love the fact that this is one that you are tackling head on every single day. I love your content. I'm a fan. And I see how much it impacts other women. So I really want to just squeeze that little bit more information out of you today. Now, Kelsey, it's 2024. Do you think our relationship with our bodies and food, more importantly, our bodies, is getting better or worse?
I think there's more conversation around it, which allows opportunity for healing.
Mm.
And I wouldn't say it's perfect, but I do think that people are more open to different body sizes and body shapes. Different things can work for different people. So there's definitely more openness, but there's just so much opportunity for growth still.
What do you think has brought about that openness?
What has brought about the openness? Mm.
Compared to how things were before.
Well, I think I assume we're generally around the same age. Growing up in a day and age where thinness was godliness, and all of the messaging that we received as children and young women was about being smaller.
Yep.
And I think over time, some of us maybe just got a little sick of it and realized that this was not sustainable, this was not healthy, and seeing other role models as people who didn't fit the norm was an opportunity for us to say, hey, you know what? Maybe I can question this. Mm. Maybe I can think differently. Maybe I can nourish my body. Maybe I can care about how I look, certainly, but it doesn't have to look one certain way. Mm. So I think just maybe an evolution over time.
Got you. So we obviously the media plays a humongous role in that, but how much of it do you think is women ourselves taking ownership of our own voices? Do you think it was the media that was we should actually listen to what women want? Or do you think it was women hold up? You know, there is no way I'm going to fit into that outfit, this, that, or the other. It's time for me to be seen.
I think the media and culture has had to adapt to us and
the demand.
Our thoughts. Yeah, because I think a lot of trends start at the ground level and they start to catch steam in different ways. And so I think over time, the media has had to at least be open to the conversation of other things, because it's just the messaging wasn't resonating with all of us who felt like we weren't being represented in the correct way.
So effectively what you're saying is we women are the empowered ones. The media is now adapting to us. We just need to keep leading the charge and keep having our voices heard. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, where are we at with regards to our relationship with food? We talked about bodies there briefly, but, you know, compared to in terms of acceptance, in terms of knowledge, where do you think we're at? Are we in a better place or a worse place?
We're in a better place, but there's still room for improvement. Mm-hmm. And I think there needs to be a lens of always just checking ourselves within our own selves and being able to say, okay, how am I personally doing in my relationship with food? Because I think a lot of times we think we're doing okay, and then we realize deep down, okay, I actually do have a lot of things, a lot of different rules around food that I didn't realize I was having. I have a lot of habits that could be considered disordered that I didn't realize were so. And so being able to constantly just check in on ourselves is a really important thing. As far as the culture at large, I also think that's a conversation that is being had. There's certainly different movements with body positivity and wonderful things like that. But I also think that there's sometimes the pendulum is swinging in different ways where, for me, I think everyone has space to be heard. And we all have a lot more in common than we think we do. But sometimes we get too dogmatic about certain things and we don't listen to other people's perspectives, other people's life experiences. And I think if we were just willing to take a step back and listen more, we would be able to realize that we all have a lot more in common than we think we do.
And often perhaps some of our goals are pretty much the same, right?
Totally. Some people think weight loss is the goal. What they really want, when you dig layers deeper, they want to feel strong. They want to feel confident in themselves. They want to like the way that they look in clothing, which doesn't directly translate to one specific number.
Yeah, or doesn't necessarily translate to weight loss. Could be muscle building.
Absolutely.
You know, I was just actually doing a check-in today with our online audience and really getting people to understand that actually the way we talk about our bodies is often really misguided. You know, the terms weight loss is so general, you know, it really only means, okay, just generally losing weight, not really caring whether it's water or fat or muscle mass, and how we perhaps need to kind of like listen more and re-educate ourselves into the things we're really trying to achieve. What are the places where you think the conversations are, you know, where are the places where they're having these conversations? Where are those right conversations happening? Where are those conversations that are moving the needle forward? And where would you say are the places where we can make even bigger strides when it comes to food, knowledge, and education?
Well, I think first and foremost, like we were talking about on the ground level, it's these conversations between individuals in friend groups, being able to be open with how people are feeling. And I think there's a way that we can be direct about what we're experiencing, but say things in a more loving way. For example, going out to eat is always a very interesting thing in different friend groups, especially among women, certainly with every person.
Especially in January.
Yes. Yes. When people have the goals, and there's nothing wrong with setting goals, but when you go out to eat in a friend group, it's really interesting to hear how people go about ordering, how they go about making adjustments, how they go about saying, oh my gosh, I was so bad yesterday, so I need to order this to make up for it.
Yep.
I worked out so hard today, I earned it. I deserve it. You know, just these different things that feel very normal, but actually, if you kind of peel back the layers, they have a big impact on how we view ourselves psychologically.
Absolutely, and how we feel about ourselves and how we feel about food. I have, in fact, we have a girlfriend that is always talking about carbs. Always talk, oh my God, I can't believe you're eating that. Oh my God, are you really gonna have that donut? Yes, I'm having this donut.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm having this donut.
Always.
It's so that's, you know, the ground level conversations. And then where do you think there's room for improvement? Where are we not getting it right? Where is the education lacking?
Well, there are lots of places that I think we could improve. One is social media. That's a really incredible opportunity, and often the ball is dropped.
Where do you see it dropping?
I see it dropping in certain types of content where I think people are well-intentioned. Most of the time, I kind of have that lens on the world, and so sometimes it's a little too rosy.
We'll get into that later.
So let's assume it's well-intentioned, and people are trying to share what they eat in a day to be informative and say, hey, here's what I do, here's what works for me, and perhaps that's well-intentioned. the unfortunate side is young people will see this. People who are trying to achieve certain goals will see this and say, okay, this person ate X amount of calories that is actually way too low for whatever this person needs, or it's way too restrictive for what this person needs. What you need is different from what I need, is different from what Sam needs, from everybody. And so that type of content can be really a tricky, sticky place.
I think it can really sometimes even set us further back. We've been navigating, producer Sam and I, you know, we've been talking about, do we post the, this is what I eat in a day? And I'm like, if you're going to post it, or if we post it, we need to make sure that we're posting it with a bigger message.
Yes.
I.e., I have, you know, let's give the all of the information. Like, I'm a person who suffers with ulcerative colitis, so you're not going to see a bunch of cruciferous vegetables on my plate. I am currently in this phase of training. This is my current mate. You know, there's so much more nuance, I think, to the social media and those posts, especially around food, than we're getting the opportunity to see. Do you think that we women, we talked about groups, especially when we're, you know, ordering out and stuff like that. Do you feel like we women are encouraging like poor choices and habits, or are we supportive? Like, where do you think we're currently at in this current state of the world, state of knowledge that we have and access that we have available? Do you see, especially amongst, you know, your group of friends, do you see that there is like negative reinforcement or positive reinforcement?
Totally depends on the group. It's really interesting. I think that there are certain people who have had experiences that they've had to grow through that then allows them to have kind of a bigger picture and understanding what is important with nutrition and their relationship with food. And then there are other groups where it's almost the word that comes to mind is alarming, because I have had such a terrible personal experience in this and just worked through that, and then also worked with so many people who have had challenging relationships with food, that when I hear certain conversations happening, it's a bit alarming that this is still something that people experience, because that's so far removed from the work that I've had to do along the way. So I think there's not like one overall, here's where we're at. It really depends, but I think that there's a positive direction, but we need to be open about the conversations and less judgmental, because I think sometimes people just don't know. They don't know the things that they say, the choices that they're making. They don't know that it's having a negative impact on themselves or on their friends. They don't. They just don't know. And so that's why we need to have these conversations and say, hey, here are the things that I've learned that have been helpful and helped me feel more relaxed around food, allowed me to enjoy the donuts without guilt, have the carbs that I want to have, be able to have Taco Tuesday and Pizza Night Friday with my husband every single week.
Yep.
Because that brings me joy.
I notice. I've seen that on the old Instagram. I can't eat pizza because I'm lactose intolerant.
Totally.
It's one of the things I miss in the whole world.
Yes.
But I do indulge in yours. Thanks for your weekly pizza nights. But you mentioned there, I want to hear a little bit more about your experience.
Yes.
So you mentioned there, you know, those things that you find alarming. What has been your personal experience with, you know, relationship with food, relationship with your body?
So I was an athlete growing up. I played basketball. I ran a little track, but not to the same.
What event?
Yeah. I was a sprinter, so I did like the one and two.
Would we have been in the relay team together? I think we would.
I mean,
what leg are you going to run?
Well, back in the day, it was...
I would have put you on two.
Yeah.
With those legs, I'd put you on lane
you
two.
You can put me wherever you want. If you want me to run, I will run to the moon. But anyway, my main sport was basketball. And so I just found so much confidence in that. I was very shy growing up. And once I got into sports, it allowed me to express myself in a way that I didn't know possible. And it just it connected me with my body and allowed me to express myself. So that was always something that I was so confident in because I loved it. And throughout high school and then into college was a big wake-up call. It was.
Then you got to college.
Yes, and you know, moving across the country, moving away from my family, didn't know anybody, and being in a brand new state. So,
which college did you go to?
A small school in Costa Mesa. It's called Vanguard University.
Shout out!
Shout out Vanguard! Go Lions! I moved and started playing. It was a much faster pace, higher level, bigger, faster, stronger. And mm-hmm. so I decided to start training more to get better at my sport.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by training more?
So I would do extra. I would go for longer runs and I would just add in all of these extra things. I was always the first one mm-hmm. done in the sprints. I was always, you know, working the hardest in the gym, like all of these things.
I feel like you and my husband Derek would get on like a house on fire. He's a former basketball
player. Oh my
player.
Gosh, amazing.
But you guys have similar personality types. That. Don't let me interrupt
no,
you. Go on.
I love it. So I wanted to work hard to be better. Mm-hmm. And then I also did more with my nutrition. Mm-hmm. Ill-informed, but I thought that I was doing what would make me healthier. So
what did that entail for you?
So over time it became extremely restrictive, mm-hmm. but basically I was like, well, carbs aren't good for you because of early 2000s magazines. Mm-hmm. So I just basically stopped eating carbs in general.
How on earth would you even get through the match without carbs?
Well, not very well. And I wonder why I struggled when I was adding in all of these extra things, why I struggled to get through a 3-hour practice.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything in my system that would support the needs of my sport.
Yeah, there was no fuel.
Yeah.
You must have just literally been running on fumes.
Yeah, I completely was. And mm-hmm. I started restricting meats and anything that was high fat. And to the point where within the course of a few months, I lost a ridiculous amount of weight, mm-hmm. and to the point where I would be so dizzy, yeah. I would almost pass out, yeah. where I couldn't actually think. Mm-hmm. I went to go pick up my mom at the airport. This was like before I had an iPhone, mm-hmm. and I got lost for 2 hours. I'd been to this airport 100 times. I couldn't, it was so weird because I couldn't trust myself anymore.
Mm.
And I had a few different kind of episodes mm. where I realized there's something wrong here.
Did you ever black out?
So I didn't like fully pass out, but I had a couple times where I was spinning in the weight room, just laying on the ground. Mm. Like it was really scary.
Did you ever have hallucinations?
Well, not in the sense... Well, what do you mean? What
well,
kind?
Well, I can remember one of my training partners overdoing it once. And there was this one day where she was literally having hallucinations. Mm. And she was so burnt, so frazzled, that she was just, you know, all of a sudden, like, not in her body. Her reaction was just not one like I'd seen ever before. She couldn't, glazed over, couldn't see us. We're trying to bring her round, didn't know where to throw water at her. And, you know, there were times when she would get dizzy spells and there'd be times when she'd be like, okay, I'm feeling faint, I can't. And it just took me back to that moment where I was like, I remember being so scared for my mm-hmm. friend who was just so, like, having been so fit, she was so out of body.
It's, yes. Not like a hallucination, but definitely in the level of like panic attack.
Yeah.
I had several of those and it was extremely scary because like I said, I'm very type A, by the books. Everything in my life has been planned for forever. Mm-hmm. And so going through these experiences where I didn't have control over my emotions was extremely scary. And I remember I've told this story before where the first time I realized I had a problem was with my husband. Mm-hmm. Well, he was my boyfriend at the time.
Go Den.
And we ordered a pizza and we were just going to have a quiet night in. And so the pizza arrives and I open the box and the cheese is just so gooey and hot and it smells delicious.
Oh my
but
God, I want
I
some.
Absolutely flipped out. I started sobbing and I like threw the box away from me and I was screaming, Dennis, I cannot eat this. I cannot eat this. And he was like, what is happening? Mm. Like he had no idea what was going on, mm-hmm. but seeing the thick and fluffy crust and the cheese and all I saw it as something that could actually kill me. And so I've realized now, like, I think these Pizza Night Fridays are like a silent celebration of
how far you've come.
Yeah. And I didn't really realize that until recently.
So you were obviously connecting those types of food to like mortality. But what do you think was the through line? Like, why did you think it was going to create such an extreme outcome?
Well, I think at that point, it was actually an eating disorder. Yeah. And so I think there is kind of a spectrum where people can have a disordered relationship with food, have mm-hmm. disordered habits, mm. but it's not fully over the line into a clinical eating disorder. Mm-hmm. I think this period of time was when I really, unfortunately, took that plunge. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon after, I continued to lose weight mm-hmm. and I had to stop playing basketball. I couldn't make it through a practice. And my doctor told me if I went for a brisk walk, I could go into cardiac arrest. Mm. So that was when they diagnosed me with anorexia. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, I hadn't gone into the school cafeteria in months. Mm. I would have Dennis bring me fruit because I didn't allow myself to eat anything really. and so, yeah, after that, I had to go into treatment at UCSD. I was the first adult to go through the family-based treatment program.
How did you find the treatment?
So my mom, mm-hmm. she is incredible. Shout out, Mom. Yeah, she did all of the research, and she found this group called FEAST. Mm-hmm. And it's basically a support group for caregivers, mm-hmm. For parents and caregivers of people who are suffering from an eating disorder. And so they said, here are a few different places that you could go. And this place was in San Diego, so it wasn't too far away from where I was going to college. And it was a family-based treatment thing, which now is a lot more common, but mm. back then it was, it hadn't really been done with people my age. I was 20 at mm-hmm. the time. Mm-hmm. And so in my cohort, it was children and me.
Yeah.
And it's a very humbling experience when you are a high-performing person mm. having to be in a treatment facility with children.
What did that bring up for you?
Well, so a lot of things. Mm. I'm a very calm person. Mm. And being there, they really challenged a lot of the disordered behaviors. We learned a lot. There's a lot of different types of therapy that we went through, mm-hmm. but one of the most challenging things was challenging some of the thoughts and behaviors that I was having. So mm-hmm. they would bring us meals of our most feared foods. And wow. It was terrifying. I mean, if you don't have a poor relationship with food, or if you've never had an eating disorder, it's hard to imagine what that feels like.
I imagine it probably feels like somebody bringing you a hairy tarantula when you're scared of spiders.
Absolutely. Yeah. Someone's pushing you off of a cliff. Mm. You're afraid of heights, and you're not only just falling off of a cliff or looking over, you are actively falling, mm. and they're making you do that in order to survive. Mm. And that's the interesting thing and why I'm so passionate about relationship with food, because this isn't spiders. We can't just stay away from spiders. This isn't drugs or alcohol that you can just stop doing. Obviously, those are very challenging things to overcome, so I do not want to diminish that. Mm-hmm. The difference here, though, is that we need food to survive.
Absolutely.
And so we have to learn how to coexist with food.
Mm. Yes, Kelsey, bring that heat. Yes, we do. Yeah,
so it was a very challenging experience. So through that, lots of therapy and healing, and it was, the recovery process was very interesting, and that's why I think...
Tell me more.
Yeah, so part of it, of the actual treatment process, was we created a contract, and I made this contract with my family. And basically, and it was a bunch of different bullet points about how I would go about being accountable to myself, being accountable to my recovery, and to them. And kind of...
This is really interesting, because you are an upholder. Mm-hmm. You are... Look at me going straight into psychological mode.
I love it.
I'm like, you're an upholder. So there's one thing, I think you are less likely, you're an upholder. So therefore it's so important to you to uphold your own expectations, but also the expectations of others. Mm-hmm. So I imagine that contract was a really important binding thing for you.
Absolutely. I don't like to break rules. Mm. And that's also why it was so hard to break all these food rules and all of these habits that I had created myself. Those were rules too in my mind. Mm. They weren't correct for me, but they were rules. And so being able to learn how to distinct from the real voice of my head and the lying voice within my head was a real challenge. It was up and down. It was not linear whatsoever.
You said you didn't know how to trust yourself. How did you gain back that trust?
Little by little. A lot of it was support. Mm-hmm. So obviously through different types of therapy, and Dennis and my family.
Who would hold up the mirror when you were like veering off course?
Well, so after my mom had to go back home after a while, but she would obviously always check in with me and was always super supportive and everything. But Dennis carried a huge weight here in my recovery and being my accountability. At first, a part of the contract was I wasn't able to choose my own meals because I, at that point, I mentally and physically could not bring myself to choose meals that were nourishing for my body because I had a lot of refeeding to do. I had to put on weight in order to be medically stable. And so I wasn't able to do that. So Dennis would have to prepare my meals for me and he would ask my opinions, and it wasn't like he was force feeding me. There was always a discussion and all of this kind of stuff. But for months, that was how we did things. There was one point where one of my rules that I had for myself was that I didn't eat red meat. And it was very arbitrary. People choose different ways of eating for a lot of reasons, and I don't have judgment around that. But my choice for eating red meat was, there was nothing upholding why I couldn't do that. So it was a rule I had. And while in recovery, Dennis would make me chicken, and then when he felt like beef, he would make himself beef. And then there was one day when he just slammed down the pan and he was like, "Kelsey, I am done making two meals. Today is the day you need to eat beef."
How did that go down?
It was challenging. At first, I felt a lot of panic, but I was like, okay. I mean, I had been through a couple months of this recovery process, so I felt like I had enough stability to be able to start checking myself. Another huge piece of why I wanted to recover certainly was I wanted to uphold the contract. And I was sick of feeling the way that I was feeling. I hated it. I hated myself. I hated everything. So I was like, the only way to move forward is to do this. So obviously there's that piece. The other piece was we were engaged now at this point. I wanted to get married. And my family was like, "Honey, if you are not healthy, this can't happen." And so that was a huge push for me too, because I wanted to get married. I wanted to start my life as an adult and as a wife.
Like, I'm literally, there's so many things whirling through my mind. I'm so glad that you've obviously come out of the other side, for one, because it means we get to sit down and have this meaningful conversation. So my next question is, you know, you made it all the way back. Not a lot of people make it that all the way back. We know that. Unfortunately, like, that's a sad fact. Like, we know, obviously, you're working very closely with your online group. Tell me more about that. Like, what is your hope for those people who reach out to you, know your story, and reach out to you wanting you to bring them back?
So I definitely have a line in my scope of practice. I don't treat eating disorders. That is for doctors and professionals who specialize in that. So if people are actively, if they reach out and they actively have an eating disorder, or are very, you know, sure that they probably do, then I always refer out and I give them a bunch of different resources and I ask them about their journey and share resources that seem like they'd be more aligned. But I think that relationship with food is definitely this spectrum where not everyone has a clinical eating disorder, but a lot of people do really struggle in their relationship with food and with their bodies and with exercise in general. So because of my experience, I feel so passionate about helping people feel that empowerment. And in a way where it's still okay if someone wants to change how their body looks. I don't believe that that's inherently wrong. But how we go about it and how we view ourselves in the process is very important. And so I'm very careful with the words that I use. I am always very uplifting and positive and really just focus on a lot of the habit changes that will help whatever goals that they have be a byproduct. But we focus on these positive habits and little things. It's little mindset switches. And you talk about the psychology, right? So when people come to me, if they have fat loss as a goal, I say, okay, great. Let's focus on getting stronger instead of focusing on getting smaller. When we build our muscle, when we change our, you know, focus and nutrition to this, it allows us to feel more empowered in this process. It becomes about what we get to add to our lives. We get to add muscle. We get to add these amazing workouts. We get to add strength and power and all of these things that just add so much value. and your goals then become a byproduct. But Absolutely. We don't have to think about what we have to take out of our nutrition. 100%. We don't have to think about all of these things that we have to take out of our lives. It's all about what we get to add value by doing.
100%. Here for that. You know, one of the things this year, and it's obviously only, you know, we're a couple of weeks into the year, and it's been so interesting, actually, you know, with the clients here at Slay. We've seen them coming back in, you know, everybody's motivated at the top of the year to get back on their train, back onto their goals. But I've noticed a real shift in the air. Mm-hmm. You know, there have been, you know, everybody's journey and their speed at which they kind of have their come to God moment is completely different. I think sometimes as a trainer, a lot of your job is just literally holding space for people and trying to guide them. Sometimes you feel like you might be banging the head against the brick wall, reiterating the same things, but there's certainly been a shift here in the past couple of weeks. You know, you'll always see me talking on Instagram about the importance of protein, but this week has been game changing. The amount of women that have come back around, kind of admitting that perhaps previous habits and things are no longer serving them, working for them, and they want to know a little bit more about the protein and how much did you say? And so, you know, I've been using some really kind of sly tactics and dropping a few hints here. And it seems to be, you know, filtering through. This is the first time I feel like it's filtering through. And I feel like with, and I don't know whether you feel this about the industry, that we're in this kind of big swing place. We have injectable weight loss drugs, and then we have, you know, high protein, like, you know, lose weight with as many calories as you possibly can, like your aim is to eat as much as you possibly can for your goal. Like, these two things are like at complete odds with one another. And so I feel like what they're doing for women is they're either pushing you towards one or pulling you towards the other. And this is something I think is going to be a really interesting period. Like, the next 18 months, 3 years, I think is going to be absolutely crucial for the overall health of women when they decide which direction they're going to go in.
Absolutely.
But, you spoke about, you know, growing up a female athlete. Were there any instances that you felt perhaps fed into those moments that led you to have an eating disorder? Were there any, you know, like responsible figures, coaches and things like that?
So I think some of it is subliminal messaging, that we, you know, it's the old school Abercrombie and Fitch model situation where they, you know, just all these images that were fed all the time. In college though, there was an experience where I love my coaches and all of my teammates, and they're amazing. We did have this one experience with a trainer who did the fat pinching test on everyone.
And which is super inaccurate, by the way.
Yes.
I know, because I've done it myself in the past, and I've figured out over years that there's a better way of doing this.
Totally.
Yeah.
And it's also like, we're athletes. Like, let's figure out how we can, you know, do all of it without having to hyper-focus on body fat.
100%.
You know what I mean?
If there's one world where body fat, you know, like, isn't necessarily an issue, and especially in a team sport can vary so greatly, then it's body fat. Like, the way one person performs with 15% body fat and another performs with like 30% body fat can be completely different.
Totally.
There is no uniform number that makes you a great athlete.
Exactly. And sometimes when people are leaner, when they're their leanest, they perform worse than if they had slightly more. So it just, now I know it wasn't fully aligned with what was helpful. But so he did the test on everyone and then read the results out loud to everybody in the room.
In the group. In front of everyone.
In front of everyone.
And he thought that would be a good idea.
Apparently.
Motivating, I guess.
Yes, perhaps. And then proceeded to say if you were carb tolerant or not carb tolerant.
And he would decide whether you were carb tolerant or not carb tolerant based on the sum of your skin folds.
Yes.
What a load of rubbish.
Yeah. Yeah. So things like that where I was in this space where I wanted to be better at my sport. I wanted, and at a certain point, I was like, okay, well, if I can't be the best, then I'm going to be the fastest. I'm going to work the hardest. And you find these ways to kind of trick yourself. Mm-hmm. I'm going to eat the healthiest. Mm-hmm. They're not ill-intentioned things. I wanted to do the best, but it just went down a really dark path.
That's so sad. I feel like, you know, having come from the world of sport as well, like the, I don't know why, it's always the male coaches sticking the knife in. And it's so, so sad. They yield so much power, especially when you're such a young athlete, you don't know better. And, you know, we've had our own instances in UK sport and in UK athletics of fat shaming. Mm-hmm. And like, I hope and I pray that the education at college level, at school level sport is now there. Mm. And I hope that our instances and the things that we've had to live through means that that the next generation of young female athletes don't have to experience anything like that whatsoever.
Absolutely. I mean, think about how game-changing that would be to be able to not have like food and over-exercising be a part of the equation. To have the knowledge to be empowered would be a game changer.
I think about it on two levels. The amount of time and mental and emotional energy that you're saving these long girl, these young girls, and then think about the level of performance that they would get if they were getting the right information.
Yeah.
I remember one of my performance like experts, this is for the Olympics, we were talking about how I can improve my power to rate ratio and make me, you know, better in the high jump.
Yeah.
And I talked to him about my diet, and in my weekly food diary, there was like crisps, which are chips. He's like, well, they can go. And I was just like, at that point, I remember thinking, I'm not giving up crisps.
Yeah.
Like there's one thing wanting to be the best, and then there's being the best, but also being really true to who you are. And I'm like, I'm going to go to the Olympics, and I'm going to go to the Olympics with a bag of chips. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
There were just certain things. I'm like, I'm all that and a bag of chips.
Absolutely. You truly are.
I was like, there's no way you're going to take this little bit of joy away from me. I was very like, you know, there was no conversation about, do you prefer savory snacks or sweet snacks? Like that was my one piece of joy. And, you know, I think the intentions were supposed to be positive. And I think because of sometimes strengths of character will prevail. But again, when you're young and you're susceptible and you're perhaps vulnerable, then, you know, that's not always the case.
It's so true.
One of the things I wanted to ask you, obviously now working in the world of fitness, what do you wish you knew 10 years ago that you know now?
Well, overall, you just learn so much by working with all different types of people. Mm. And so, of course, you wish you had the knowledge to be able to speak into everyone's experience and mm-hmm. everyone's needs. So I think getting started, understanding there's not only one right way to go from A to Z.
100%.
There are so many ways that you can do it, and understanding that we are all individuals and there can be more than one right answer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really empowering thing, and it's quite relieving actually, mm-hmm. because if something isn't serving you, you don't have to do it that way. There 100%. Are a lot of other ways that you can do it.
One of the things I've found as a trainer actually is that, and I don't think a lot of trainers will admit to this, that every time you take on a new client, it really becomes an exploration. You're learning so much about that person in terms of their body, in terms of perhaps nutrition. And there really is this period of getting to know them. What exercises work for them? Are they a good pusher? Are they a good mm-hmm. puller? What kind of like calorie goals work for them given their goal and things like that? And so I think that very few clients, trainers will admit that there is always an exploratory process. And there is never obviously a one size fits all program that works for everyone. And so what I will say to those people out there who are, you know, looking for online coaching and looking for in-person training is have patience.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think once the reality of it is once you have a professional on your team that is vying and rooting for you and also wants to get you to that end goal, it really is a partnership and it's a team effort. And like I found especially with my clients who have been with me the longest, those journeys have not been linear. Sure. Like they've never been like a year-on-year improvement. It's always been a dance. And eventually you start to see people moving towards their goals. And it's very, very rare that you get a person where you're just straight off the bat from A to Z as quickly as possible. It's just not realistic or real.
Well, that's the beauty of consistency.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be perfect to be making progress. And if you are consistent enough to show up to your gym, mm-hmm. you know, X amount of days a week for 4 years, mm-hmm. how much better is that than showing up 7 days a week for a month?
Absolutely.
Right? So we don't have to be fully right on.
What are you being consistent with in 2024, Kelsey?
What am I being consistent
with? Absolutely. What are your goals?
Oh, gosh. I have so many things. One of the things that I love doing is learning. And so I feel like I'm always constantly wanting to learn more. Mm-hmm. So one of the things is the podcast that we were just talking about. I just started a podcast. And
what's it called?
It's called The First Hour with Kelsey Heenan.
Fabulous.
And the whole premise is basically understanding people's first hour when they first get started, when they are not experts. Mm. What is their journey from that first hour to getting to where they are? Mm. And so just learning the fun things and the realness of people is something that we don't always see. We see these experts and we look up to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to understand we all start at zero. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's I want to dive fully into this and allow myself to be challenged. It's like you were saying with training clients, every person is different. Every interview is different. Every personality is different. So that's something that I really want to work on this year is just improving that.
Mm-hmm.
In my own fitness, I don't have any specifics. Like I want to bench press this or whatever right now. I just, in general, want to continue to stay consistent moving my body. Mobility is definitely something that I don't focus enough on.
Okay, I'll do mine with you then because yeah. It's atrocious at the minute.
It's... I know. I feel you. It's mm-hmm. something that I want to focus on this year for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. What is definitely out for you in 2024? What is the thing where you're like, nope, not doing it, not doing it. I'm drawing the line, boundary.
Really good question. I, for much of my life, have been way too hard on myself.
Mm-hmm.
And expecting, I mean, I know perfection is not possible, but expecting the closest amount that I possibly could for my own abilities. So this year, I want to do the best that I can and also have so much fun. Like life is not guaranteed. I want to be able to experience traveling more with my husband this year. I want to meet new friends and spend time with them. I love going to shows and concerts and comedy and all these things. Like these are the things that bring me life.
Mm-hmm.
So why am I not doing more of it?
Absolutely.
So
one of my good friends, Kerry, had a year of failure.
Mm.
She was really in that place where she was kind of like stuck because she felt like she would never try because she was afraid to fail. And so I think it was like 2000 and I think it might have been 2021. She said, F it. This is going to be my year of failure. She smashed it.
That is
because
so cool.
Fear was gone. Like the freedom was back. And, you know, she absolutely had an amazing year doing it. So I wish you all the very best with that.
Thank you.
Kelsey, we're going to move on to a little game that me and Samantha put together for you, Ooh. Me and producer Sam. It's called Hit or Burn.
Okay.
So
love.
Either one of these things is a hit, that's a yes, or it's a burn, it's a no. I don't want you to overthink. We might dive into a little bit more detail if the topic so requires, but I want you to literally just give me your opinion. I've been obviously deep diving you for some time now on Instagram, but no more than I have this week. And I've gone through your Instagram and pulled up a few things just to see what your opinion is on them.
Bangs. Bangs, hit or burn. Like hair bangs?
Yep.
On myself, they're a burn.
Okay, excellent, because I've got bangs at the minute that couldn't be slipped back.
I'll tell you what. I have had so many haircuts that I regret.
Can we have a montage of them on Instagram?
I would absolutely.
Didn't you do something the other day with outfits?
Yes,
that was
I did.
Funny. I think we need one with haircuts now.
I mean, it's definitely a possibility because I've had so many and you know what? It grows back.
Exactly. But that's my thought. That's what I was thinking. It grows back.
Yeah, it grows back. It's fine. It's fun to experiment, but my hair is so fine. I have extensions right now, but it's like there's not a lot to begin with. So if I use my precious hair for banks, there's nothing left in the back. It's just all in the front.
Business in the front.
Exactly.
Nothing in the back. Let's see. Number two, cosplay.
Oh, hit.
It's a hit. I was like, wow, I've never seen so many outfits.
Yes.
Favorite outfit of 2023, what was it? Favorite thing you dressed up as?
So 2022 I was Harley Quinn. I loved being Poison Ivy. That was a really fun one. I was probably 6'5". I'm not kidding. I'm almost 6 feet in general.
What are you wearing on your feet?
Oh my gosh, the biggest platform shoes of my life. But that one was really fun too.
Love it. Three, it's almost as if we know you. Perfectionism.
Oh, burn that ground.
Burn that sucker. I pulled this one up. As I was just like curious, marathon running.
Okay, for myself,
yeah,
burn.
I was gonna say, have you ever done one? No. People ask you this all the time. I feel like, and anyone that kind of perceived you as being the fittest thing on earth, they're always like, oh, have you done a marathon? You're like, no.
No. It's, you know, I think it's amazing that people do it, but I love the short stuff. Mm-hmm. I just feel like first of all, just way more fun, and then just, historically, I spent way too much time running as punishment, mm-hmm. and so I don't have the interest in doing that training.
You have to come and join our short distance running club.
Oh, I would love that. How long is the longest?
60 meters.
Okay.
So that's 60, 70 yards, something like that.
Great, love that.
We don't mess around. Speed over everything.
Oh, love that.
Weight training. This is number five. Hit all
hit.
Hit, hit, baby.
All the day.
Christmas movies.
Hit.
I watched like one last night, and Eric said to me, Lou, why are you still watching Christmas movies? It's January. I'm like, dude, let me live.
Let me live. I just put my Christmas tree away yesterday, and I was really disappointed that I did.
Good for you. What was the last Christmas movie you watched this season, this festive season?
The last one I watched, I think, was I'll Be Home for Christmas. This is with Jonathan Taylor Thomas and Jessica Biel.
I haven't seen that. Old school.
I haven't watched it either, and that's why I wanted to watch it. I have a list of ones that I watch every year.
Have you seen The Santa Claus?
Yes.
I only just discovered that this year.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Hilarious.
The Tim Allen one?
Loved it.
Absolutely.
I thought it was brilliant.
But this year, okay, this movie's like 25 years old. This is the first year that I actually clicked in my mind that it's the Santa Claus, like, with an E on the end. Like, it's the Santa contract. Yeah. Did not understand that before. Yeah. And now I get it.
Okay. She's fast, but not that fast. Kettlebell swings.
I like them.
You did?
Yeah.
Love it. I'm not a massive fan of kettlebells. I've never used them in track and field training.
Yeah.
Kettlebell swings, like, I'm not mad at kettlebell swings.
Totally.
But I'm not happy at kettlebell swings.
I keep it to the basics with kettlebell stuff. Like, I'll do the swings, I'll do the carries, like a goblet squat with it. But I'm not doing, like, the snatches and the clean, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I would just want to say that a kettlebell is not the most ergonomically friendly of appliances, you know what I mean, or equipment to use. But I'll be doing a video soon for kettlebell swings.
Oh, fun.
Fun. I'll send it to your dear.
Please do.
Pull-ups.
Hit.
Come on.
I love
Where are you up now? Because I've been watching this journey. Like, I know that the pull-up has been an exercise that you have really wanted to, like, conquer. Use it to check in. You know what I mean? Where are you at with it?
Well, so I had to pull back for a little bit. I was having some shoulder stuff. So I'm definitely not at my best. My best ever one time in the entire universe, I got 16.
Woo!
That was the most I ever got.
And that's overhand grip as well.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal.
I could probably get 10.
Yeah.
That's
excellent.
But it would be a struggle.
Yeah.
It'd be a struggle. I want to get back to it though.
Yeah, it's hard when you know you have that number in your head.
Yeah.
Especially for you, because we know how you like to push it.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I feel you.
Cohorts. So I'm talking matching crop top, matching leggings.
Oh, love a matching set.
Yeah.
Love a matching set.
Where are you buying from this year? Like, who are you wearing?
Well, right now it's Skims and Aloe, but
honestly, can't knock a bit of Skims.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, you like it or you don't like it?
I do like it.
I love it.
I know. Yeah, she's done a great job.
I know. She knows what she's doing with that.
Well done, Kim. But anything else?
Yeah, so I love Bandier. It's really nice. Mm-hmm. I love Fleo.
Yeah.
Fleo, yeah, they're great. They're based out of Texas.
Yeah.
Just very comfortable, functional fits. So that's like I'm very specific about the like leggings and the top of the leggings and how they fit, and Fleo does a very good job where they have different like heights if it's like low or medium or high,
yeah.
But they feel really comfortable. I do not like being squeezed.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I was having this conversation the other day. I feel like, you know, there are two things that we're considering, I think, we women, when we put on a pair of leggings, how they fit in terms of where do they hit on the waist, mm-hmm. the cut, and the feel.
Yes.
Like, if it's not buttery, I don't think I want it.
What's your favorite brand?
I mean, I wear a lot of Nike. They've discontinued these leggings, but I also tend to buy 5 pairs at a time.
Yes.
I'm like the Steve Jobs of fitness. Like, I'm like, okay, this is my uniform for the
and
year.
And you do have the turtleneck too.
I know.
So you definitely are channeling Steve.
You know, someone said I'm giving more, who's the lady that just got locked up? What's her name?
Elizabeth
Holmes.
Yeah.
I'm giving more Elizabeth Holmes than Steve.
Job. But without the fraud.
Without the fraud, yeah. Yeah, but Elizabeth, come by for a session when you're out.
There you go.
And our final one is controversial topic. The most controversial topic of recent times, Ozempic. Hit or burn.
This is an interesting one.
Mm.
I think it can be a very powerful tool for the people who need it.
Mm.
I do know people who have diabetes,
yep.
who take it, and it is a life-changing thing for them.
Mm.
I think treatment for an illness is very different than choosing something for a quick fix.
Mm.
So I think for people who need it, it can be a life-changing tool when you pair it with lifestyle changes.
Yep.
It's never a quick fix.
Mm.
For people who don't need it, I think it is tragic mm-hmm. for the future of how people view their bodies.
Mm.
So it's a really tough topic. How do you feel?
Well, you know, the interesting thing you were just saying is there's this element, it is tragic, because what it doesn't do is it really kind of acts as a plaster for all of mm-hmm. that stuff. So, you know, you're talking about having to recover from an ED and also having to work your way back to be at a place where you're comfortable with your body, with food, or with food more in particularly. And so there is no replacement for that work.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that all of a sudden, because you're taking this and it changes your body composition, that those things are fixed. Those things are still going to be there.
Right.
It's more a case of, you know, do you want to address the root cause?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you happy with just putting plaster on it? And what I will say, the sad thing is, you know, in our age group, there are a lot of women that have access and have the means to be able to go out and get that drug. And in a number of people, like, that I know personally, there's been a lot of illness. And I'm not sure whether they're yet connecting the dots.
Yeah.
But the illnesses that they're experiencing is connected to the fact that they're now using a drug that they weren't using in 2022, 2021.
Yeah.
And there's definitely, you're starting to see, like, the prolonged illness, so people aren't able to recover from a common cold, or, you know, they're getting fever and the things are lasting 3 weeks. So I would, for those people that are choosing to take it for weight loss, pay attention to the signs, and your long-term health really is at risk, and also your long-term health is nothing to be plastered over.
Absolutely. It's very interesting, because if someone is taking it and they use it as an opportunity to make the lifestyle changes that will carry them through,
mm-hmm.
and again, speaking to people who really need it, like, that can be very beneficial. But
and it can be life prolonging.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, you know, that magic pill that people have been wanting, and we have to be very careful and have open conversation about it, because otherwise it becomes this hush-hush thing. And I think if we continue to talk about it, and if people are experiencing signs and symptoms that are negative from it,
mm-hmm.
if no one says anything, then
you're just kind of accepting that as okay,
yeah.
normal. And I think actually what's really at stake is long-term female health.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I think it's kind of scary, because I think we'll know more about it in a few years, mm-hmm. once all of the numbers start coming through. And FYI, I'm just going to jump on this real quick. You know, for those people selling the drugs, in order for that to get approved, it just has to have a lower rate of deaths than obese. If it's causing less deaths by obesity, that drug gets stamped as a cure for obesity. So these are the things that you've got to be privy to. But let's not leave it on a light note. Let's pick it back up again. Kelsey, like obviously we talked about briefly about your kind of like little bit, fitness goals. We talked about you wanting to go to the cinema and do all of those other things. But if you think about long term, is there a big hairy goal out there that you've been wanting to achieve and wanting to slay?
Yes, and so many things. Like, I would love to have a podcast that I could do forever when I am 96 years old and still be talking to people. That's something that I really see with longevity. It'd be so cool if it could turn into like a bigger show or opportunity. Like, it'd be so cool to be a correspondent on something. So I see that as something that would be really, really fun to do. On the fitness side, just I love helping people, and I think there are a lot of different ways that can happen. I have, some in-person clients, our hip burn company, so just continuing to grow that would be amazing, and I feel like there's a lot of different evolutions that could take as well. That could be really fun.
I love that. We are supporting you all the way. Kelsey, you absolutely slay. And that concludes today's episode. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much. You're delightful.
Oh, stop it.
That concludes this episode of Slay. If you or someone you know is struggling with body image issues or eating disorders, then check out Centre for Change. They're dedicated to improving the way that you see yourself and getting you back on track. Stay tuned for more empowering discussions on female health, fitness, and life. You can follow me at Louise Hazel on social media, and you can follow Kelsey at The Daily Kelsey. Check out the Slay brand at Slay Athletic, and don't forget to subscribe to the Slay podcast and leave a review if you haven't done so already on Spotify. You can get all of the resources and tools that are mentioned in our podcast episodes on the Slay app. Download it now for free from the App Store.